How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hey there, and welcome to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network with the Rain and Jays, me, John Corrales, and him, Jay King. However you're listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, we're on all of those things. However you're listening, thank you for making us part of your routine day in, day out. It is much appreciated. We have a great interview coming up with Maine Red Claws coach Scott Morrison. A great story, how a guy who was a successful college coach in Canada gave it up, basically took a volunteer job with the Maine Red Claws, and has since become the head coach. And he's now out working out Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart in California, in Los Angeles, maybe as you're listening to this show. So there's a lot to get to with Scott Morrison. But, Jay King, breaking news, a Woj bomb. It seems as if Russell Westbrook is on the verge of signing a renegotiated final year and extension, one of the new wrinkles in the last collective bargaining agreement. So a sign and extend type of deal with Oklahoma City to stay there, thus ending any fantasy of a Westbrook to Boston trade.
Yeah, and this... I mean, it's not a huge surprise. I think it made financial sense for him. He's going to make about $9 million extra next season, with the hope that, or not with the hope, with another year with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and he'll get to play with Steven Adams, Victor Oladipo, see what they do next summer in free agency. Maybe they add someone. It's been rumored that they'll target Blake Griffin to go there. He grew up in Oklahoma. So this isn't a huge surprise, but from the Celtics' perspective, it takes him off the market this year, and it takes him off out of that 2017 free agency class when they will have some money to spend.
Yeah, and not only does it take him out of the mix, it could take, like you mentioned, Blake Griffin out of the mix, because if Westbrook had left, then... yeah, Griffin grew up in Oklahoma, but we just saw it with Durant. He grew up in D.C., and if he doesn't like that situation, he's not going to go to the Wizards. If Westbrook is gone and Griffin doesn't like that situation, he's not going to go to OKC to rebuild. He'd be a free agent. He wants to go to a good situation. So with Westbrook there, it creates a situation that may be desirable to free agents. Maybe not. I don't know. But they've got some good players there. And if things work out, and if Donovan can get those guys together, and if Westbrook has this monster year, if you play fantasy basketball and you don't draft Westbrook number one, you're crazy. He's going to have a monster year. They may be setting up to be a destination that could challenge the Celtics for pretty key guys. This is a huge summer for the Celtics coming up in 2017. So that's a very big deal. And an interesting note from Ryan Bernadoni, who was on the show. You know him as at Danger Cart. He has fashioned himself into a pretty nice cap guru. This is a direct tweet from him. Depending on how the next CBA plays out, Westbrook is setting up to retire as the player with the most career earnings in history. So KG and Kobe are the only guys who have made more than $250 million in their lifetime. If Russ takes the renegotiation plus 1 year of extension and then a 5-year max, he'll make $250 million in the next 7 years alone. That's some money.
That is a nice chunk of change.
That's huge. So Westbrook is staying in Oklahoma City. at least for the next couple years. We'll have to see how that's structured. There's talk of a player option at the end of it. So it's not the rest of his career in OKC, but he clearly has decided to stay and take on the mantle of face of that franchise now that Durant is gone. And he'll certainly have something to say about that when the Thunder host or visit Golden State. That's going to be a real interesting game to watch. Now, transitioning back to the Celtics. Jay, you had a very nice conversation today with Maine Red Claws head coach Scott Morrison, who we've seen have a very hands-on part of the development of a number of our young players. And he talked to you about Terry Rozier, Jordan Mickey. He's working out Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown. A lot of great stuff when he had this conversation with you today. So let's get to that. Let's let you guys listen to this. He's got a great story, great insight about our young players and their futures and the future of a lot of things going on in the NBA and the developmental league. So here is Jay King with Scott Morrison earlier today.
All right, so we're here with Scott Morrison, head coach of the Maine Red Claws, the most recent coach to determine I was not good enough to play in the D League. Scott, thanks for coming on, my man. So we'll get right into it. You're in LA right now working out with Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown. First of all, what are your first impressions seeing Jaylen Brown?
Well, I saw him a little bit in Summer League. I missed a good part of Summer League being away with the Canadian team, but I caught the last couple games and then was able to watch him on film. And I've been really impressed, like everybody, with his athleticism. He looks like a veteran pro, not a 19-year-old kid, that's for sure. And skill-wise, since we've been out here, I think he's shown a great deal of potential. A lot of people are asking, you know, how his shot looks and things like that. I think he has great potential as a shooter and explosive to the rim and improving his finishing. And probably the biggest and most important thing is he picks up things quick and he wants to learn, which is a key for anybody that has to develop.
Yeah, it's funny because at Summer League, or on the night of the draft, he got booed, and it was just relentless. It was vicious. And people were disappointed that you guys didn't make a big trade. And then first game of Summer League, he tries to dunk on somebody's head. Then he tries to dunk on another person's head. And fans were like, oh, okay, I kind of like this pick. Jaylen Brown, nice to hear. He said he's working on a lot of defensive things. What have you guys been doing with him and Marcus in the gym?
Well, the nice thing about having both of them here is they can compete together. And for sure, Brandon and myself, we've been working on fundamentals and theory and things like that with defense. But there's no better teaching than getting Marcus out there and just seeing and feeling what a real NBA player looks like. And Marcus has been great because he shares his knowledge with Jaylen and says, hey, in the league, this isn't going to work, or guys are going to do this when you do this. And like I said, he's been real good to just listen and pick it up, but he doesn't back down either. He'll try and compete with Marcus, and both guys are out there to win, but also out there to help each other, which has been great.
That's got to be a tough welcome to the NBA. Like, hey, Jaylen, you're 19. You just got drafted. Here, try to score on Marcus Smart, man.
Yeah, no, Marcus isn't going to give up any easy buckets, even in August. And Jaylen's a strong kid, getting stronger, but Marcus has that man strength that you can't teach or get in the weight room and just trying to move him or set a screen in the drills. I know I'm coming home with a few bruises every night, too.
I know one thing people are wanting to know about is whether Marcus kind of has another level of playmaking. Because obviously you guys will need some more of that with Evan Turner gone in Portland now. And when I say you guys, I mean the Celtics organization, the Red Claws, everything. But does Marcus have more of that to his game than he's been able to show so far?
I think he does. I think he showed signs last season, too, at times. I'm not speaking for him, but I think any time where you're struggling a bit with your outside shooting, you try and maybe force things around the rim a little bit. But when I watched Marcus, especially in the playoffs when he was, you know, playing pretty well, he'd get in the paint, help would come, and he could make the open pass, open read. And that's one thing that we work on here too every day, is just reads based on what the defense does. So I think you'll see him reach another level. I know he's putting a lot of time in on his shooting all off season. He works out with us in the morning. He goes to another gym and shoots in the afternoon. And then when we can, we go back at night, and he joins us for extra shooting then too. So I know he's been serious and, like I said, a great example for a guy like Jalen.
That's one thing I've always thought was neat about your guys' organization, is that you guys go and make house calls or L.A. calls in this circumstance and go meet with the players and work out with them. What is the system like there? Are there certain guys that you work out with, or do you just kind of go with whoever needs to work out? And how many times during the summer, I guess, are you making house calls like this?
Well, this is my first time being involved, and I definitely appreciate Coach Stevens, you know, keeping me in the mix and letting me come out here and help these guys. But basically, you know, when the season ended, I believe Coach talked to all the guys, all the players, and said, you know, we're at your service all summer. If you want us to come where you are, we can help work out. If you want to come into town, you can. And at Summer League, Coach just basically divided up the staff and sent us different places. I know there was a group of guys in Atlanta. I know there are guys going to Chicago next week. And he knew that Marcus, Jalen, and also Terry was here for a couple days as well. So he had myself and Brandon come out, and we've been sharing the duties. Brandon's one of the best I've ever seen on the defensive side. He does a lot of defense with the guys, and Coach Stevens and I sat down and talked about some of the things that he felt Jalen needed to do in order to contribute right away, and that's been our focus since we've got out here.
Everybody raves about Brandon Bailey's defensive mind. I think Sullinger last year called him the next Tom Thibodeau, which is high praise. So I want to talk a little bit about your journey now, and I'm kind of fascinated by your journey. So if I get it right, you were coaching a Canadian college team and then decided, you know what, I don't need to get paid anymore. I'm going to go see what I can do. Landed a volunteer assistant position with the Maine Red Claws. And then I believe it was a year later, you were hired by the head coach. So I guess take me through the thought process of what made you convinced you to take that risk and go that route, and then how you climbed, I guess, to become the head of the Maine Red Claws, head coach of the Maine Red Claws.
Sure, yeah. I mean, first off, I got a couple breaks, which I probably couldn't explain as briefly as possible. But basically, I was coaching at Lakehead University. I had done 10 years there. It's a college in Canada. The Canadian college level is probably equivalent to good Division II or low Division I in the States. And I actually negotiated in my last contract a paid leave of absence for 1 year. It's obviously not something that, Bill Self's going to get at Kansas. Those guys can't just pick up and leave for a year. But the nature of our business in Canada is not as big money, and guys, can top out their salary pretty quickly. So I negotiated my last contract to pay leave of absence. I didn't know what I was going to do with it. I knew I wanted to learn more and experience a different level of ball. I actually had 3 D-League coaches on my Facebook, funny enough, and I Facebook messaged them all and had a couple interviews. And Coach Taylor, who was in Maine at the time, said, yeah, come on down. You can, help out wherever you can. So I did a bunch of scouting. I worked out 4 or 5 of the players, including Chris Babb, who we had in the team the year after as well, and the Celtics called up a couple times. And I did some other grind work too. I did the laundry, drove the bus, kind of whatever they needed me to do. It was a fun year. And I didn't travel with the Red Claws that year, so when the team went on the road, I would take the opportunity to go to Boston as much as I could and just watch and meet the guys there. And then Coach Taylor wasn't brought back. I know Coach Stevens and Danny and those guys looked at a couple people in the summer, and I just kept hanging around. Eventually, they kind of gave me an interview and decided to hire me. So I didn't come there to volunteer and try and get a job. I came just to learn and plan on going back to Canada. I recruited all year and went back there for the summer. I was working out my guys in Canada when Coach called and offered me the job. But as soon as he called, I was done. I was jumping at the opportunity, and I figured I had a pretty successful run in Canada. I could always probably go back if it didn't work out here. Couldn't pass down the chance.
Yeah, that's such a cool story. It's like almost out of a dream. Like you couldn't even make that up. so it's really cool to me that you did that and it worked out the way it did for you. Obviously, it speaks a lot to the work you've done and the player development stuff. And, you know, everybody in the organization raves about the work you do with players. One thing I'm interested about coaching in the D-League, obviously there's an aspect of it where you're not just coaching to win a basketball game. You're coaching to prepare these guys for their next opportunity, whether it's with the Celtics, with another team. What one D-League coach once said to me is everybody in the D-League wants to get somewhere else. And how do you kind of balance that in Maine? And what is it like, I guess, coaching, knowing you have to use the Celtics system and all that? And how do you balance all of that?
Yeah, it's a tough task, but obviously just as we talked about in the last story there, I'm very lucky to have it. So I embrace it. I was told first off, before I was even hired, that my goals were to develop players in Maine, to provide an environment in Maine that the Celtics front office and coaching staff felt comfortable sending guys for periods of time. And then way down the list of goals was to win games. So it's hard as a competitor sometimes to keep that in mind when you're, you know, there's a bad call that goes against you, or you want to, you know, give the guys a day off so they might be fresher for a game, but the better thing to do is to work out. But it also, if you think of it, takes a little bit of pressure off the winning and the losing side as well. And, you know, as far as the D-League goes, it's a unique environment. The guys are there for hopefully a short time and a good time, not a long time, as they say. And coaches are all the same, too. Everyone's, like you said, is trying to get somewhere. We try to talk to the guys before they come in and then continually remind them throughout the course of the season that the season is an investment. They're taking this year to invest in themselves, to become better players, to become better pros, and to set them up for a long career where they can make more money elsewhere. And it's kind of bittersweet, but this summer I think it's been a good sign of our work there. We had six guys sign good contracts in Europe that were on our team last year. And obviously we're going to have to start from scratch with our roster this year, but it's nice to see those guys get rewarded for their efforts and have their kind of sacrifice of playing in the D-League pay off, which is what everyone's goal is, like you said.
Do you see the D-League one day becoming like a real minor league for the NBA with all 30 teams with a team?
Yeah, no question. I think that's going to happen sooner than later. Most of the teams that don't have a D-League team right now are trying to get one, with the possible exception of Portland, who seems to be the outlier. But I believe there are rumors and speculations that at some point in time, the next bargaining agreement with the NBA, they're going to make a rule that every team should have one, and hopefully also change the kind of dynamics of how the players are selected and paid, because as of right now, it is a sacrifice for a lot of those guys to take the pay cut and invest the time in themselves. It'd be nicer and probably better for everyone if the best players in the world that weren't in the NBA happened to be in the D-League, and to do that, you're going to have to pay the guys a little bit more.
Yeah, that'd be really needed if it became a minor league like that, and instead of going overseas to play, you know, you had that in that Spain league type of environment in the D-League. That'd be really cool. A lot of the Celtics spent time in Maine last year. Terry Rozier, RJ Hunter, Jordan Mickey, James Young. I guess we'll start with Terry because I think a lot of people are excited about his summer league and what he did there. He's another guy like Marcus where people are wondering, Does he have more playmaking to give? And I think as a rookie, he kind of took a backseat and did it knowingly and did it as to help the team be as good as it could be. But obviously, there's going to be more opportunities, I think, for handling the ball this year. Is he another guy that could take a step forward? And how much did you see him progress during his time in Maine?
Well, he definitely improved while he was in Maine. He had a tough start. A lot of guys do when they come from the NBA and they haven't been in the D-League before. They kind of expect it to be like going back to junior high or something. And oftentimes they get kind of a rude awakening because, you know, there's good players in the D-League that just haven't gotten a break, or maybe they have some deficiency in their game that keeps them out of the NBA, but overall a lot of good players. And the biggest thing for someone like Terry is when he steps onto the court in the D-League, there's 10 guys in the other uniform that are just straight gunning for him because they're trying to prove that they're better than whoever wears that NBA kind of logo on their back. So he had a tough start. He had a couple tough games out in the showcase in Santa Cruz, but then kind of got refocused. And remember, he sent me a text after one of the games, you know, kind of saying, my bad, but I'm picking it up here. And he did. He worked hard, played within the system, and kind of showed, I guess, why the front office picked him so high. And I was great for me, everyone, I guess, that cheers for the Celtics to see him in Summer League, because he really kind of raised his game. Looked a lot more confident and kind of slowed down without losing speed. He's such a fast kid that sometimes I think it's hard for him to make reads at full speed, but a lot of guys, as they progress through their career, especially point guards, they kind of slow the game down, see it slower, and be able to use their speed in bursts, and I think he did that this summer. In both summers, he showed a knack for hitting tough shots and like crunch-time shots, so I hope he gets a chance to do that this year.
What's it like when a guy goes down? Is there a lot of player development stuff, more player development stuff than the NBA? Obviously, sometimes players would spend, you know, up to a week, even in some cases, with you guys. I guess, what is their routine like when they're in Maine with you guys?
Well, if Dave Lewin listens to this, he'll be annoyed because we like to say the guys are going up to Maine since it's geographically north.
There you go.
Sounds a little nicer as opposed to getting sent down.
Sorry, Dave.
But yeah, the guys he'll be happy for the correction. The guys are definitely heavy on player development. I mean, playing minutes is big too. Sometimes a guy will go up to Maine just to play minutes and get kind of their legs under them if they haven't played a while in Boston. Other times, if guys are assigned for longer periods of time, like we had Jordan Mickey for maybe 6 weeks this year, and Jordan was, you know, just the same as everybody else on the team. We did the weights and skill work in the morning and practiced in the afternoon and came back at night and did more in small groups. And he was there every workout. And I think that's one benefit. He wouldn't have had that opportunity in Boston just because of the schedule, you know, the road trips, the games and everything else. It's hard to put the hammer down and really, you know, get those sessions in the gym. But with us, that's part of our daily routine. And just having the goal of development over winning allows someone like Jordan or Terry or James to get a chance to not only get minutes, but kind of fine tune their skills when the games aren't on.
Yeah. Now Jordan, obviously he put up some really big stats, points, blocks, rebounds. He was on the D League All-Star team. He really did a good job. I think he was a player of the month in December. What did he show you? What does he still need to do to crack what is right now a deep and veteran front court?
Well, I think he needs to continue working on the stuff that we tried to focus on, and that includes many things, but definitely his outside shooting, his attacking, you know, out of the short roll catch, whether it be into the rim off the catch and the roll, or catching it, reading the defense, and kicking it out, kind of like you imagine Draymond Green doing sometimes. And just keeping his mindset. I think that he had the best mindset of anybody we've had sent up to Maine in the 2 years or 3 years that I've been around. He came to work. He was part of the team. He kind of took the leadership role in Maine while he was there. And just a quick note on Jordan, he was around during Christmas, and we had our annual team Christmas party. And I told them, the guys, that, you know, you have to wear jeans or pants of some kind. And Jordan came into the office after and said, hey, Coach, I don't have any pants here. And I was kind of joking. I was like, what the heck, man? You make $1 million, you can't get a pair of pants. And he's like, well, I have pants, Coach, but I didn't bring any with me. I came down here to work. So I said, man, you want to say that? You can wear whatever you want to the party.
So what did he wear to the party?
That he had. I think he wore some sort of sweats, but as long as he's getting 8 blocks a game, he can wear anything he wants to the Christmas party, as far as I'm concerned. I think he'll be all right. I think he maybe gets a little bit nervous sometimes when he goes into the game in Boston, and obviously in Maine, he was able to play a little bit more confidence and getting more of a rhythm. So he's going to have to figure out a way to play well in short minutes in order to earn that chance with Coach Stevens and the guys.
Yeah, that's always tough. I was a short minute type of guy, and I never played with the same confidence in those short bursts that I did when I played longer. One last guy, RJ Hunter didn't spend much time in Maine, so I'm not going to ask you too much about him. He only played a few games, I believe, with you guys. James Young, I think there are some people in Celtics fans who are a little disappointed. You know, the third season he's played in Summer League, and maybe they thought he should have been more improved by this stage. What do you see from James, both in his work ethic and what he's done on the court when he goes to Maine?
Well, I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he's probably played more minutes for us in Maine than he has in Boston. So we've seen him, you know, all different situations. I think that he still has the potential to be a good player. It's kind of a crutch, but also kind of a good excuse for him that he's so young. I mean, he's still the youngest on the team, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe Jalen's younger than James, I'm not sure. But it's just one of those things where now, like everyone said, it's time for him to put that aside and show what he's going to be as a player. I can't speak for Coach Stevens or the guys in Boston, but I know when James comes to Maine, he works hard. He's there to get better. We get him in the gym extra time, whether we're at home or on the road. And I think he's improved his skills. Like, defensively, he improved a lot over the course of the two seasons he was there. And it really showed at the end of last year. I felt like that was probably his biggest improvement and a testament to him, but also the coaches in Boston. But he's not going to get a chance to show that unless he can improve his all-around game. And shooting is something that he's supposed to be able to do, and he has done at times. And I think for him to crack that lineup, that's his best chance to prove that he can knock down shots consistently. And if he has improved on defense, make sure he brings it every night.
One thing I've read about you that really interested me was that when you did take that year with the Maine RedClaws as a volunteer assistant, one thing you did was you looked at, I believe it, I read that you watched 30,000 three-pointers to see how teams created the most efficient shots. Is that the only study you've done? Have you done other studies? What was the reasoning behind that?
Well, to be honest, the reason was twofold. One, since I was taking kind of a sabbatical, I wanted to have some research project, just like a professor might do if they took one. So when I got to Maine, it was kind of hot, the topic of no mid-range or no long twos. And Houston Rockets D-League team, RGV Vipers, they kind of set the standard for that. But what I found was they would just take any three. Any three was considered good for them. And for me, I felt like it could be improved, that line of thinking or that theory. So I just sat down and, like you said, I just started watching games. And I probably did chart about 30,000 shots and figured out the percentage based on how it was created. And you don't have to be a genius to figure out that your shots are better when you get the ball into the paint, but I feel like people don't pay enough attention to it. And when you don't pay attention to it, you end up settling for shots that are, you know, less productive than you could get if you attack. So it really all comes down to just being aggressive and attacking and making the right read. But I still chart that stuff. I did some stuff for Coach during the playoffs and tried to help where I could in terms of seeing how efficient the guys were, what kind of shots they, you know, were choosing, were the best possible shots, etc. And this summer with our national team, I just happened to be on staff with our head coach, Jay Triano, who's now in Phoenix, and he happened to be a big fan of those stats as well, and he had some different things that he tracked. I added those to what I like to look at, and it's just kind of been evolving over the course of the last 3 years. Pretty soon I'm going to find something else to study because people are getting tired of hearing me talk about paint touches, but I just really, really believe in it. And I think I can help teams, you know, improve their efficiency by looking at it a little closer.
That's all one of my college coaches talked about was paint touches. Just get in the paint. Anything else that happened, he was okay with. Just get in the paint, make the defense react. It was paint touches, and whoever wins the battle of the foot wins. Like, whoever's whoever's foot is there first. I don't know. I don't even remember. That was a long time ago in some bad years of my basketball life. But so what type of information did you get, I guess, from the playoff series? Obviously, you guys had a tough time scoring. The Celtics had a tough time scoring against the Atlanta Hawks. What type of information did you get from that study?
Well, I was tracking my usual stuff and sharing it with Coach, and then Coach kind of saw something different in the numbers and had me adjust a little bit what I was looking at. For example, we found that Atlanta would really load up the paint early and, you know, try to stop IT from getting to the rim and then try and scramble out of it. And Coach wanted me to look at their first attack at the paint and then the second attack at the paint. For example, if IT drove and kicked it and respaced and then someone else drove, what was the percentage of scoring on that second attack versus the first attack? And what we found was it was much higher. At the end of the day, I guess, you know, in part probably because defenses have trouble loading up the help side, scrambling out, and then re-helping again. Probably, again, you know, common sense. But when you have the numbers to support it, sometimes it's easier to get it across to the team to this is how we got to play. No one wants to shoot a bad percentage, and obviously no one wants to lose. And when they see their own numbers on the board, sometimes I think it's easier for those guys to you know, adjust how they play. I'm pretty sure James Naismith, when he drew the rules up, probably told his guys to attack the paint too. but like I said, and your college coach did it. It's not something groundbreaking, but I think just the fact of showing the players the numbers, maybe there's five or six possessions a game where they decide to attack and get a better shot as opposed to settling for something, you know, off the dribble or mid-range.
This stuff is cool to me because – you always hear about how Brad and you guys are really committed to the numbers, and then the way you guys utilize it, I think, is really neat, and the amount of numbers that you keep track of. Is there any other type of number you really look at when you're trying to prepare a team for a game? Like, I guess, what are your favorite numbers?
My favorite number is 11. That's the one I wore when I played. so anytime I can use 11, that works. but for me, it's offensively, you know, how many times are you getting to the paint? How many times are you getting multiple attacks in a possession like Coach Stevens looked at? How many times are you getting a paint touch and a ball reversal at the same possession, which I found this summer to be the best possessions. There are ones where you change sides of the floor and get a paint touch. That's the highest rate of scoring. So offensively, that's my biggest things. Dave Lewin is always coming at me with some new number. This past year, our focus on defense was not allowing free throws, like just not fouling people. And we ended up being the best in the D-League at that. He also wanted us to get more rim attempts. We were in Maine, we've always been a good driving kick team just because of that paint touch philosophy, and we have shooters. Dave challenged us to become one of the best getting to the rim. So our three-point numbers dropped a little bit, but we did have a higher percentage of shots at the rim, which are probably even better than open threes. So those are kind of the numbers that we were looking at this year, and I'm sure when I get back there in a few weeks, he'll have some other number that he wants us to look at, and we'll try and figure out ways to improve it until we get that top five in defense and offense, which everyone wants to be.
Do they kind of use you guys as an experimental ground up in Maine?
They haven't really, to be honest. Some D-League teams, or some NBA teams, I should say, use their D-League to experiment. Others wanted to mirror their system as much as possible, and I think Coach Stevens probably is closer to that. We don't do everything the Celtics do, but pretty much everything we do is something the Celtics could do, if that makes sense. We don't have as big a playbook, but our plays are probably out of the Celtics' playbook. We may run them a little bit different based on our personnel. We may do a few things, tweaked a little bit because our players are different. But the key thing is if RJ or Terry or Jordan or James come up to Maine, they got to be able to arrive on the morning of a game and be able to comfortably fit in there and play. That's what our goal is. So we do a lot the same, and Coach and the guys have been really good about letting myself and our other coaches be in Boston a lot during the preseason, off season. Because we not only see what they do, but get to watch Coach put it in himself, and there's no better way to learn than that. He's a great teacher, and Just you learn something every day you go in there.
Yeah. Now we've taken up enough of your time here. I know you're out in L.A. Beautiful L.A. You've only seen one cloud the whole week you've been out there. So we're going to let you get back. We're going to let you get back to working out with Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown. I got one last question for you. There are a few months left until the next Open D-League trial. I'm just, what do I need to work on to have a better shot of making the team this year?
I'd say grow. That would be one. Grow, get faster, be able to jump higher. You're kind of an undersized five, so if you can somehow get your measurables up a little bit. Dave and the scouts, they're big on, you know, reach and these kind of numbers. So you're going to have to improve those measurables, and then maybe we can get a second look at it.
My reach has always been brutal. I'm 6'2 with a 5'11 wingspan. My parents just really screwed me over, man. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on this podcast with us. And, yeah, thanks a lot, and good luck with everything this summer.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Jay. Likewise, man. I enjoyed it, and enjoy the rest of the summer. We'll see you in a couple weeks, hopefully.
Jay, a lot of great stuff there. I don't even know where to start with reacting to that, but let's start at the beginning. It's really cool that he's out there with Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown. And I just love this whole notion that this rookie has to work out against a pit bull like Marcus Smart, who, as he says, has man strength.
Yeah. If you're a rookie who has all the athletic potential, but isn't quite the best at putting the ball in the basket, a good way to practice is going up against Marcus Smart every day and going up against him in drills and competing against him. And I mean, it's just such another level. You go from competing against college guys and then you go up against Marcus Smart, who's one of the best defenders in the NBA. That is a huge, huge change. And obviously for Jaylen Brown, that's a big deal. And I think that's a good way to start off his summer, competing against Marcus Smart and really expanding his game. And every summer is a big summer for young guys. And this is Jaylen Brown's first NBA summer. So it's cool that I appreciate how the Celtics do that, where they have the house calls and they have coaches dedicated to certain players. Like, if you want us to come out and be with you, we're coming. And I think that's a really cool thing they do, and I'm sure it helps them first help develop the skills, but also develop that unity between coaches and players and players and other players.
Yeah, that's huge, because as a player, to say, I'm working out in L.A., you want to work out where you're comfortable, whatever it is. He mentioned Atlanta, Chicago, a bunch of other places. If that's where you're comfortable working out, fine. To know that members of the coaching staff are willing to travel in their downtime. August is supposed to be the dead time. August is supposed to be, let's take a vacation time. But these guys, these dedicated assistants, we always give the head coaches the shine, and Brad Stevens sure as hell deserves a lot of the shine. But these assistant coaches work their butts off all the time. And a guy like Morrison, who's developing players and running the D-League program, to go out there and travel around the country, shows an amazing level of dedication from the organization to the players and their development. And obviously it's mutual. They want the players to do well, because selfishly they want the team to do well. But the players know that working them out, it gets them to play better, and it increases their value, that them reaching this potential and working with these coaches, that makes them better players, which means they get bigger contracts. So that's part of a very strong relationship between the two sides. I thought it was really interesting to hear him talk about Maine and going up to Maine. We want to make sure we get that part right. Going up to Maine, that the way they run things, they're trying to run Celtics things, but not necessarily be a carbon copy of what the Celtics are.
Yeah, and I even though he said they're not really experimenting with stuff, I think it's obvious like with the no foul stuff and trying to use the paint touch stuff that to an extent they are doing different things in Maine. And they're really using that as a breeding ground. But obviously the most important thing when guys go there is to develop the players and develop the skills and get those guys, whether it's James Young, you know, RJ Hunter, Jordan Mickey, ready to play at the NBA level. And that it's interesting because there's that dichotomy, like Scott Morrison wants to win games, but also that's not the number one thing on his list of priorities, as he said. It's really a neat dynamic there, and I think the Celtics have used the D League well, and they've had guys go down there,
we gotta do right by Coach Morrison and get that part right.
Yeah, they've had to go up there. Got to get that one right. Sorry again, Dave. I think they've really used that well to develop these young players. And obviously, right now, the Celtics roster is not the best place for a young player. There's tons of depth. There's too much competition almost in some places. And there's just not the opportunity for these young guys, even first-rounders like James Young and RJ Hunter and Terry Rozier last year, to get time on the court and time to develop at the NBA level. So Maine has been really important for those guys. And one of the things he said that you were interested in, I was too, was Jordan Mickey being a little nervous, he thought, when he got NBA minutes. And I think that's natural. But also, it's not something you really think about when you judge how guys look in short minutes. I also love the story about the sweatpants. Like, they were dressed.
That's such a great anecdote. Because you sit there, you're like, oh man, it's leading up to you thinking like, oh, this guy maybe he's a little irresponsible, but then he drops that line. Well, I just came here to work, and you're like, man, I just love Jordan Mickey now. Can't trade him. He's now untradeable.
Yeah. He just came to work. He didn't bring any dress pants. Just sweatpants, man. I feel like I got to average like 8 blocks a game so I can wear sweatpants to work every day too.
Sure. Yeah. What would the equivalent of you averaging 8 blocks a game be? In the media.
I don't know, man. I don't think there is. I don't think I'll ever get to the level where I achieve anything the equivalent of 8 blocks per game.
Yeah. The Mickey stuff was really interesting to me because, yeah, people don't look at the nerves. They just, again, I say this a bunch. Fans, and not just fans, but we tend to look at players as robots. They are on the TV. They might as well be characters in a video game. They don't accept that players get tired or nervous or emotionally upset or whatever. Like the expectation is that these guys can run forever and play forever, and nothing ever goes wrong, and their minds can't ever wander. Meanwhile, it happens to all of us all the time, but just because these guys get paid a lot of money, it doesn't make them not human. This is just typical human stuff, which I really like hearing about. I'm very fascinated by that stuff. So the notion that Mickey gets nervous sometimes in these NBA minutes, it just shows how young he is and inexperienced he is. He's got a ton of talent, but it's just something he has to get over. I was also very interested about the Rozier misconception and this thought, because we always say this, and I know we've said it before on this show. The D League is the competition is not NBA level. It's not even close to NBA level. But it's better than people might think. And it's better than a guy like Terry Rozier thought, because when he got down up to Portland, he struggled. I'm working on it. He struggled because he didn't expect things to be that competitive. So it was really interesting to hear the story of him and having to text the coach to be like, my bad.
Yeah, that was a cool story. And what's cool about that is he learned from it and he went up to Maine and learned his lesson. And then came to the summer league of a handful of months later and really played some great basketball. And obviously he learned that he needs to be locked in all the time. And that's a valuable lesson. And, you know, Rozier, I'm really interested to see what he does this year, because he showed a lot in summer league, and he's going to need to show a lot at the NBA because they don't have Turner, and they need that creator in the second unit. Their offense has fallen off so hard when Isaiah Thomas hasn't been on the court the last couple seasons. And they really need a guy like Rozier to step up and be capable of doing all that stuff. So, you know, who knows? Maybe it was that trip up to Maine that helped him do that. And maybe he's got that confidence now where he can go out there and be that playmaker that he was in summer league. It's going to be confidence, though, I think, a lot with him, because he showed it in summer league. He can do a lot of the things that he didn't do as a rookie, but to do it at the NBA level is a different beast.
Yeah. Confidence is such a huge part of athletic success, because it just means you move more fluidly. And when you're not thinking, a lack of confidence means you tend to think about things that happen. And when you think on the floor, you are a step slow. You think about your shot, which means you start to aim the shot. You're not thinking about the offense. You miss opportunities to cut. You miss opportunities to hit guys who are cutting. There's a lot. You miss defensive assignments. You miss rotations. When you're not just reacting and recognizing things in the floor and having that confidence in your game, your entire game suffers. So the confidence to go out there and do this stuff is hugely important, especially for a young guy like Rozier. But going back to the whole mistake, I'm okay with people making mistakes on the floor or in these situations where you go to the D League and you screw up a little bit because you didn't expect certain things. The problem that I start to have is when you don't learn from mistakes. And so mistakes are great. I think mistakes can be the most productive thing, not just in basketball, but in life, where when something goes wrong, when you can recognize why it went wrong and fix it and make yourself better, that is just a gigantic development. So I think for Rozier, that's a good point that you made, that if that development there was a kick in the ass for him to say, I can't take anything for granted, then that's a hell of a lesson, and it's a key point in his development that we didn't really hear about. So great story there from Coach Morrison. And I just think he has such a fascinating story, coming from Canada to that league where he says it's good D2/low D1, and he just says, I'm gonna take a paid sabbatical, and he goes to Maine and just volunteers and starts tracking these three pointers and really just taking every opportunity to ingratiate himself within the Celtics organization. And just the way that they approach the statistical analysis, and especially the part where Brad Stevens looks at his numbers and he goes, well, what if he looked at it this way? It's just that whole thing was really amazing, to get that inner workings of compiling data and how they look at it.
Yeah, I thought that might have been, for me, the most intriguing part of the conversation. Just the amount of depth they put into things like that, and that they have someone like Scott Morrison, who was with the Red Claws all year, chart something like that, a really useful stat, and something that they used to create their game plan. You know, during that series, I can remember a lot of players saying, oh yeah, we need to get in the paint and then kick it out and then attack again. And that was a lot of that was based on Scott Morrison's research. So that's a cool thing when they have, you know, this guy who most of the year is with the Maine Red Claws, comes up, tracks a stat, shares it with Brad Stevens, and Brad's like, oh yeah, this is a key. And just the depth of it is really interesting. And just the amount of information they have and the amount of information they mine to try their best to win basketball games is really incredible.
You have people like Coach Morrison and many, many others within the organization. This isn't just Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge and, you know, Austin Ainge and a couple of people making phone calls and the assistants.
there are video coordinators. There are people just putting pieces of video over and over and over and over again, just compiling all that stuff. And even if, I don't know if anybody's seen this, but on Celtics.com, they have the a day in the life of RJ Hunter during the Vegas Summer League. And they have, they're breaking down film of the, of their opponents going back to the Orlando Summer League. And it's amazing to me that that's, they still do that throughout the summer, and people are compiling this information and show, this is what happens when he does this, and this is what you should do when you see this. It's just such an in-depth, and you say full-time job, it's two full-time jobs in one. And it's just amazing the level of commitment and the amount of work that everybody in the organization puts in. And like you said, not just the Celtics, the extended Celtics organization in Maine, the sheer hours, the man hours of compiling information and sharing it and debating it and putting together the plan and getting the guys to work on it. Oh man, it's exhausting just to think about. I can't imagine pouring through all of that information myself. Through after 5,000 three-pointers, I'd be like, eh, you get the point.
I don't think you last 5,000, John.
I was trying to make myself look good. I don't know if I can get through 500, but that's 30,000. Wow. My favorite part about the conversation is the discussion about the 30 teams, the 30 D-League teams for 30 NBA teams. First of all, what's Portland thinking? The outlier of Portland just being the one team that doesn't want to participate is weird. But I am a proponent of this because I think the NBA needs a true farm system. And this goes into the college debate and the European leagues, because what's happening now in the NBA is there are a lot of NBA level guys that aren't playing in the NBA because they can go make more money overseas. And they're not getting their opportunities to play in the NBA because the money exists in Spain and Israel and Germany and China and wherever. That's talent that's not readily available. That's mid-level talent that could change an entire roster. It could be a mid-level type of guy who makes the entire team suddenly click, a key player off of the bench that changes the rotations just enough. We've seen it with the Celtics. You take one guy out, you put another guy in, and boom, suddenly it makes sense. Those guys aren't readily available. They're playing overseas. And their guys in college, they're learning bad habits. So to me, I think the best system for the NBA to get the highest quality talent and be fair, and college people aren't going to like this, but I think that a true NBA farm system of 30 D-League teams with an expanded draft beyond the second round, you can go to four or even five rounds. Eliminate the one-year requirement in college and have guys that can just come out of high school. And create a contract system where it mirrors what Major League Baseball does with its minor leaguers, where you can sign a major league contract, but when you go down and play in AAA, you get that money. I think that would be a system that really helps younger players develop. We hear about how unfair it is for Ben Simmons to have to go to LSU. And we know that he was sleepwalking through LSU, and we don't know what damage he's done to his game or his perception or anything. Maybe nothing. Maybe he did nothing. Maybe he's always just an NBA player sleepwalking through college. But he could have come out, and if, let's say he went to Philly, could have gone into the D-League and developed there if they wanted him to develop there. Or however it worked out, and pay him a better salary, but a minor league salary. I just feel like that would allow younger players to develop. It would allow mid-level players to find a place in the United States where they can be seen and they can maybe crack the NBA, and then really would push out the lower level talent, the guys who shouldn't be in the league but are. Those are the guys that get pushed out, and those are the guys that end up going overseas to make their money. I think that kind of overhaul is necessary to truly get the NBA talent level to where it should be.
I'm in. I think the D League is very underutilized right now, and I think there's a lot more possibilities for it. I think if you get that type of talent, then fans will go. Right now, you go to a D League game, with the exception of Portland, where they usually have good crowds, there's not usually a lot of crowds. And there's a lot more they could do with that league. There's a lot better players that could get that league. Instead of losing someone like Gershon Yabusele, for example, to China, have him in somewhere in the United States. And
why couldn't he play in Portland? How awesome would it be if he played in Portland?
Yeah, exactly. And guys could go watch him there and develop and have draft and stash guys in Portland. That would be sweet. It would be good for everyone. It would be good for the Celtics. It would be good for the prospects. It would be good for the fans. But there's a commitment and the money, and the D-League contracts are a lot different than the money these guys are getting overseas. So there's a lot that's going to have to change for it to become a real minor league and a place that can attract that top talent that's not in the NBA.
There's a lot of money out there. There's a way to figure this out. I grew up in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Pawtucket is the AAA home of the Boston Red Sox. The Pawtucket Red Sox were so much fun to go see, and in part because you knew that a few of those guys were on the verge of becoming major league stars. You go there and you see, now I'm old enough to remember Mo Vaughn when he played, but Mo Vaughn was a really good major league player. You see guy Wade Boggs go through there. These big time major leaguers that spent time there, and you got to go see them for not much money. You get to see them in their younger days, and you get to kind of watch their careers launch. That gives it, not only does it make the product great, it gives an emotional investment in their future with the team. So it just strengthens that bond between fans in Maine and fans in that surrounding area with the Celtics and with the future of these guys. And yeah, if Yabusele could have gone into Portland and played for the Red Claws, that would be so much more fun, because they're on YouTube. We could use the clips. We could see him out there be the dancing bear and have a lot of fun with it. And then maybe they could call him up somehow. That would be just great. So I hope that in the next collective bargaining agreement, that this sort of system gets put into place. I think it would be just so great for the NBA, and it would just strengthen the product all the way around. And that money would come back to the owners, because fans would want to go see these bright young stars, future Celtics and future whomever, Knicks, Hornets, whatever. They'd want to go watch these guys and be invested in the team's future. So I think that's just huge all the way around. I would love to see it.
I'm in, John. I'm with you, man.
All right.
Let's start the rush, man. Let's start the crowd. Let's get a petition out there. Let's do this.
I'm all for it. Let's do it. So, Jay, that was a great conversation. I'm sorry I couldn't have been part of it, but that was a very nice job, a nice conversation that you had with Coach Morrison. And thank you to the Red Claws and to Coach for coming on. That's really, really great to share that level of information with us and to the listeners. This is really one of our more informative shows, thanks to that. So again, thanks to the Red Claws, the Celtics, Coach Morrison for providing that for us. Thank you for listening and subscribing on iTunes. If you're an Android user, you can get our podcast on Google Play. Or if you wanted to go onto Stitcher or TuneIn, we're there. We're everywhere. Just search Locked On Celtics. If you can't find us, which doesn't make any sense since you're listening to the podcast, you have clearly found us. So what the hell am I talking about? Whatever. I'm Loopy, and that's the end of the show.
This is the Locked On Celtics podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network.